very common for people to feel comfortable wearing a yarmulke. However, I have many very firm colleagues. I don't want to say have many. That was incorrect. I have some very firm colleagues who, for specific reasons that we're going to now explore, do not wear a yarmulke. I'll tell you, there's certain contexts where it's very prevalent. Let's say in the world of psychology, psychiatry. So there is so many, there's so much innuendo and there's so much that it can do to affect the relationship that a psychiatrist has with the patient, that it's a very understandable area where someone would not want to be wearing a yarmulke necessarily, because they don't want to present themselves as being somebody who has certain biases, certain judgmental values, and it'll be not unusual at all for a psych person, unless you're as Yadua as, you know, Dr. Tversky or something like that, obviously he's going to wear a yarmulke, you know, and already by now our own
Rabbi Benji Epstein, I think, is getting his PhD, or he started off one.
Right, so, I mean, it's like, if you're going to cater only to the firm community, then of course that's not such a big deal. But if you're really going to be taking care of everybody, I think that's an area where there's a lot of sensitivity about this issue. But then that carries over to us, meaning the ones in the other areas of medicine. Because I'll tell you right now, it becomes an issue in... certain regards, we'll get to the specifics.
One more.
I think I'll start with that. Rabbi, also the inverse is true. By wearing a yarmulke, certain patients will feel much more comfortable. Isn't the inverse also very true? Like, if you wear a yarmulke, if you have a patient who's Jewish, you might feel much more comfortable relating certain things, especially if it's to do with his own religious values, especially as a psychologist or a psychiatrist.
Let me give you a good example. To really bring this up. I want to give you a real life example where I've encountered the problem. Okay? Now, I wear my yarmulke, and I have a Jewish look to me now with a beard and everything. So, I deal with many pregnant women. I do fetal echocardiograms. What is that? That's... you look at the fetus's heart, because some of them have major defects that we need to know about and jump on as soon as the baby's born. Other times it's part of, and often this is the case, it's part of the evaluation for people that are considering termination. Right? Now, right away, you know, I've had this happen to me in two contexts. From a couple of them, they got, I had their, you never did abortion, did you? Because that's interesting. It's in the handout to do abortion. Because abortion is something that you encounter in both, even in medical school. How do you encounter it? Because there is, let's say when you do a third-year clerkship and you're involved in OBGYN, so part of what they do is pregnancy termination. And you could, as a medical student, be asked to assist in one. Then it becomes a real question for you. Am I allowed to do that? So if by some miracle we get through all of our chayim, maybe we'll do that. Or if you guys want to do that even earlier, we can do that as a topic. But this couple got ahead there. For whatever reason, they got ahead there from a posek. I remember this was like already 5 years ago, and it shocked me that this particular rub said yes. But since then, I've learned that it's not so shocking, the particular heter he used. But putting all that aside, that's for another time. They were so taken aback when they saw me, that I was going to be me doing this study, that I was going to be part of their process of deciding termination or not, which means there's much discussion between myself and the parents over the ramifications and implications of my findings, that they walked into my office, saw me, and walked out. Now, how did I find out all the details is because I was quite taken aback by that experience. I don't like to see patients walk in, look at me, and leave. It's not very flattering.
That's if they're from patients.
First I went to the mirror to see, but... because I was looking very Jewish to them, and in their mind I would be judgmental, and I would look down on them, and they were embarrassed. Then even this was a front couple. Then it happens even more often with the non-from people just get a certain sometimes a level of discomfort potentially.
What about non-Jews also?
Yeah. I meant non-from or non-Jewish. You know, it's sometimes it seems this is. I am not making a factual statement, I'm making an observation, personal observation. It seems to me sometimes that a non-from Jewish person is more worried about my being judgmental than a non-Jewish person. They're not even thinking, you know, Sometimes we just don't even think of it. Now, this is in the New York metropolitan area. Outside the New York metropolitan area, where we see like things like the Tillman story, right, happen.
Was that MTA kid, Eric?
Yes.
Is that
the senior MTA? Yeah, sure. He's a very nice, sweet kid.
Yeah, I heard
he can't take all this fanfare. But right, so you see something like that happens to that degree. So certain religious symbols also evoke. So that's why there's a tension. That's why there is a preference for some people to, let's say, I don't want to get involved in all that. I want to just be able to be a doctor, function normally, function fully without any other issues. That's the tzad, or the beginning of the argument, which we're going to get into in more depth when we go through some of the makaros, why somebody would consider, you know, better off not wearing the armor. Then there's the parnasa. Some places might, the feeling would be by some people that they wouldn't hire me because I'm looking so Jewish. And it could work against me getting a job. Or it could get it, work against me keeping a job.
What about, not it being about you, but it being about the patient. Let's say you're the best at what you do. And you know that. You're the best in the metropolitan area at a pediatric cardiology.
Great opportunity for Kiddush Hashem.
Yeah. At the same time, what if, you know, this couple was completely discouraged because you're Jewish or religious, and you're turning away, you know,
they're not giving the opportunity to...
You're denying them their opportunity.
Right.
Because of them, because of their nearsightedness, but at the same time...
I hear what you're saying.
You could be damaging...
You have to be pretty good to be in that type of position. But your mom is just holding that I'm hurting a patient because they're not getting to see me. Sounds like a couple of surgeons I know, but...
are we going to speak about it?
The logic is correct. I just don't know how frequent that occurs. That's really.
Are we going to be speaking about it in different parts in terms of applying for a job, working on the job?
You know, here's what we're going to do. We have to talk about why on earth we need to wear a yarmulke altogether. Depending on why we need to wear a yarmulke, then we either have something to talk about or we don't. Right? We might not have anything to talk about. That's what you'll see. In other words, for example, I was going to do this a little later, but it's a good opening. Let's say it comes down to dollars and cents. Right? In other words, I want to make sure I get a job. So, what type of mitzvos do I have to be willing to forgo a good job and a parnasa? Anyone know the rules? There's two simanim dedicated to this issue. There's one in Yeridah, and there's one in Hilchos Lulav Esrei. Taf, Leish, Nun, Vav. It's in your handouts. Yeah, good. So what about Nechamah? The Nechamah touches upon it also. This talks about Hidur Mitzvah, how much you have to pay for Hidur Mitzvah. So normally Shlish, normally a third. But take a look, actually look at the end of that, I'll show you exactly what I'm talking about now. Go to page... Oh, I did move it up, It's actually page 2. Page 2 is in the context of talking about Hidur Mitzvah by Yisrael. So they get into how much money do I got to pay to get a fancy Yisrael, right? I can get a good kosher Yisrael for $50. So how much more do I have to add on to that 50 to satisfy the need for Hidur Mitzvah? Everyone familiar with Hidur Mitzvah? Hidur Mitzvah means to beautify the mitzvah as a special extra here, right? It's not a fundamental mitzvah, right? It's Zeh Keli Vandeh. So, how much extra? So, it's a discussion more about Kama, Tess, right? Tess Abadav, the base, the bottom. The Gorda discusses how much. Conclusion, Psak Halacha is basically, for Hidur Mitzvah, I got to add on a third, right? A third from the base value. So, if it's, let's say it was 60, let's use 60 was the base value for a good kosher Esrog, to get a beautiful one, so I either got to pay 90 or 80, depending if you say the third occurs. From the 60, or the third comes from the total, right? You gotta, don't worry about the math now, that's not for a topic for us. But I gotta add on at most a third. Good. Then the one says, well, what do I gotta pay altogether? Let's say I'm a poor person, I can't afford the 60. So there's a mitzvah in the Torah, I have to get an estimate. But let's say it's gonna make me have to beg. Do I have to do that? So what's the rule? So the Gemara tells me, and the Paskin, the rule is, HaMevazvez, HaYivazvez Yoser Mechomesh. Means, in the context of tzedakah, you gotta at least give up the most, almost you gotta give up is a fifth, 20%. 20% of your net worth. So, okay, good. That's for a mitzvah aseh, like taking a lulav and esrog, but I gotta be willing to pay that amount of money. Do I have to pay my whole parnasa? No way. I would not have to give up a job for a mitzvah saseh. What about a mitzvah lo saseh? What about an act that's prohibited?
Yes.
Then you got to give it all your money. So this becomes a very important question for us. If wearing a yarmulke is somehow a lo saseh, a prohibited act to go without a yarmulke, you got to give up the job. If it's a mitzvah saseh or less, right? If it's a mitzvah saseh, you got to give up a fifth. If it's less than a mitzvah saseh, what's less than a mitzvah saseh? Not even a daraisa, just a darabon. Well, you want to know what? Maybe it's not even a darabon. Maybe it's just a nice thing to do. Then there's no way I need to give up my job. And I don't care about the details of the explanation. I do not have to give up a parnasa if it's only what we call a midas chasidus, just the right thing to do. So it's very important for us to determine what is the business, not to mention, it's good to know this. Why on earth do we wear yarmulkes? Why do we wear yarmulkes? Everyone knows that? Where does it come from? So on page one, I wanted you to see the Aruch HaShulchan gives me like sort of an open rationale. Right? This gives me a philosophical understanding. What do you think is the reason you wear yarmulke? Where does the word yarmulke come from?
Yareli
Malka, afraid of the king, who is Hashem. Right. So what is it all about? It's a show of deference, reverence. That's why I'm covering my head. And the Rosh Hashanah takes it a little further and he says, the head, which is the seat of resh, of reasoning, right? You see what counts, right? That is the ideal place to be showing that you're going to be aware of the fact that there's someone above you. So it's a very nice idea, but that doesn't make it a din. In other words, that's beautiful, and it's an important thing for me to be expressing, but that's not going to make me give up my parnassah yet, because it's not halacha. It's not usher to walk below yarmulke. I didn't see that yet. So what is it? So on the bottom of the page, I gave you four sources. These are the four sources for this mitzvah in the Torah HaNigla. In the Nistar, right? Nigla means the revealed Torah. Nistar means Kabbalah. Right? So in Kabbalistic writings, in Zohar, there's more. But for us, we're into Nigla. We're very revealed people. So these are the three Makaras. There's a Gemara Kiddushin, a Gemara Shabbos, and a Gemara, another Gemara Shabbos. And then there's a Rambam. And I purposely wanted you to see these, because I want you to tell me, what type of halacha is this? These are the only Makaras, right? You tell me what the message of Chazal is on the significance of wearing yarmulkes. So the first Gemara is from Kiddushin. Gemara says like this. Amar Rav Yitzchak kol ha'over avera v'seiser ki'ilu dochak ragla eshti. This is a nice little Muslim that I'm purposely not really directly related to us, but I really wanted to get you guys to hear this. It says like this. Rav Yitzchak says, anyone who does an avera in private, right? In other words, they're outside, although they're sadly. But in private, they're not so kosher, right? They're doing averas in private. So what do we say about them? Ki'ilu dochak ragla eshchina. They're like knocking against the feet of the shchina, against the feet of a kadosh baruch. Why? Because they're like ignoring, they're like pretending, you know? They're like, oh, well, I guess no one's going to see me in here, so I'm going to do all the bad things that I really want to be doing. Only out there, when people can see, I'm going to be a great Jew. That's not a very admirable type of person, right? So in this vein, we get to the idea of the yarmulke. So the Gemara says, Shneimar komar Hashem Hashamayim kisi va'aretz hadom ragli. Like it's an allusion to the fact that Hashem is sitting between the Shamayim, the sky, and the ground, and he's dangling, like so to speak, his feet are dangling towards the ground. So Amar Yeshua ben Levi, Asur la'adam. Here's the word Isir. She yahalech arba amos bekomas akufa. So what's the ramification of recognition of the fact that Hashem is right here with us? So rule number one is it's usur for you to walk bekomas akufa. What does that mean?
Right.
Yeah. Haughty. In a haughty manner. Like that's like, who are you? You know, like, it's an act of arrogance. That's usur. Then the word continues.
It could mean the mindset also.
Yeah, it all goes together. In other words, it's not, you know, you might have a rod in your spine that causes you to walk this way, you're okay. You really want to be more humble. Right. It's the mindset together with the way you're walking. Right? How do I know that? Zasa, Shenemar, Male, Kola, Aretz, Kevodo. Because Hashem is all over. Don't think that you can ever be haughty, because you're always in the presence of Hashem. You're always going to be recognizing that you must be humble in the presence of Hashem. And then the Gemara says, Rav Huna bereid Rav Yeshua lo maske arba amos begilei arosh. So, It's in the context of this previous discussion. But here the words change. Rav Huna says the following. He says, Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yeshua, says, one should not walk four amos with their head uncovered.
Or he didn't.
He would not walk. He would not walk. Which is sending the message that one should not, but he would not walk four amos without covering his head, with an uncovered head. What word is very conspicuously absent?
Asur.
He's just telling you, I don't do it. It's the wrong thing to do. That's source number one. Source number two, over to the left, there's a Gemara in Shabbos towards the end, where it lists a whole bunch of things where they begin with the expression tasi li, which means give me a reward. I really deserve praise, right? For all various things. And then there are different things that people did that they thought was really admirable.
You're in Kedushin.
So, I'm over to the left. I finished Kedushin was what we had done up till now. Kedushin was just the statement, it's us to walk 40, but it's not right to whatever walk without your head covered. Now we're on the Gemara to the left of that, where it says, Tasili, de lo sagina, da rabas, begilai rosh. Give me a reward. Right? Which Rashi says, down below, a different Rashi says, what does it mean, Tasili? Give me a reward. Because look what I did. I don't go down amos without covering my head. Now, what's the implication of that statement? Well, if you ask it, it means that this sounds certainly not a halacha. I should give you a reward because you're following halacha, and the rest of us are following halacha too. What are you doing special? This sounds like I'm doing above and beyond. I'm not working down amos without covering my head. And the final source is the Gemara now, bottom right. Very famous story. This Gemara is a fascinating one. It's one of my famous Gemaras. It's off the Tanakh, but I really want you to know about this Gemara. This Gemara is hashkafically a very meaningful Gemara to me. It's Gemara in the Skuf Nun Vav in Shabbos. And this Gemara discusses predestination, right? Which is a very fascinating topic. Who we are predetermined, right? Do we have bechira? Do we not? Is what I'm going to be and what I'm made of predetermined? So yeah, to a large degree it is. Anyone who knows anything about genetics is going to realize, although the latest very fascinating genetics material is moving a little away from what I'm about to say, but we'll hold off on that one. Fascinating. Ooh, that stuff is really wild.
Like from your parents, is that right?
Right, or environment that could change today, tomorrow. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable, that stuff. Because what I was about to emphasize is that for the most part, though, who we are physically, and even personality, sense of humor, voice, talents, intelligence, most of these things are going to be genetically transferred. Right? So there definitely is a predetermined segment of us to a large degree. But the Gemara Shabbos is emphasizing, it fully recognized that. It fully recognized that there they use a different term for it. They didn't talk about genes, they didn't talk about chromosomes. But the Gemara Shabbos over there talks about being born under a certain month or star. Right? If you're a Madai, if you're born in the month of Mars,
you're gonna be angry.
Then you're gonna be, that's the blood month, right?
Blood.
Right? Right. So that was their understanding of genetics. That's my shot in all that stuff. Their understanding of genetics was that we see people have certain characteristics. There's something predetermining that this guy is just like his father in this way, whatever, right? But and it seems that there's a certain type of person, right, that follows within a certain family line. They recognize that there are things that are beyond their control. So, but then the Gemara emphasizes, but you get to do with your potential whatever you want to. You have bechira at that point. So, in other words, the guy that was born in March, in the blood month, in Adar, right, during that time, he could be a murderer, or he could be a shochet, he could be a surgeon, right? You still have the ability to maneuver. So, in this context, the Gemara says like this. Amar umidirab Nachman bar Yitzchak Nami. We also learn from this same concept that there is bechira for a Jew. The Gemara is focused on a Jew here. Ein mazel Yisrael. Yisrael is not beholden. They're not held back by their mazel, which means their predicted, predetermined astronomical sum. De imei de Rab Nachman. Here's the proof. The mother of Rab Nachman bar Yitzchak, Amri lo. Kiladai. There was this Kiladai who had this ability to predict what the future was going to be for her child. Don't ask me how they were able to do that, but they were able to do it. So he says, what does the guy predict? Brech ganva. Guess what your son's destined to be? Here's this nice Jewish woman, right? Very from. She's told by this guy, who's got apparently a good track record for getting it right, your son is going to be a crook. So does that mean it? That's it? He doesn't have a chira. He's determined a crook. Lo shavkase gila reishen. She, what she did was given advice not to let his head ever be uncovered. So that's what she did. Amalei kisoy reishach ki heichli tidavi alech a masa d'shamayim. She made sure that her son, growing up, never went anywhere without a yarmulke. Always covered his head. So what does this express for us? So on the one hand, for the sugi over there, tells me, guess what? Predetermined to be a galav? No, he had the ability to go. That might have been his genetic predisposition, right? There are people that are predisposed to be bad temper, have tons of bad qualities. I know all my bad qualities. I know what I have naturally, and my job in life is to perfect them and beat them and use them, right? Use my Yitzhara. That's another famous sugya. So that's what she did. She said, look, something's wrong with him genetically that he's going to be a crook. Maybe he's by nature lazy, or maybe he's by nature a rationalizer. Whatever it is, there's many reasons a person becomes a crook. But guess what? If I impart to him the proper message, if he gets the idea that a yarmulke is contained, he'll beat it, and that's what happened. And there's a famous story that's what saved him. He was about to steal something, that's the rest of the Gemara, and then, forget it, I'm not stealing anything. Hashem's right over me. So now, that's the final source for wearing a yarmulke. Does that sound like a din? Is that a din?
I thought there were more sources, though. I thought
there's a Zohar, and then there's this Rambam.
Okay. I heard there was another Gemara that, like, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
There is one big other source that I haven't said purposely.
Okay. I mean, one that it implies that someone, a married man, has the word, and someone who learns Torah often has the word also.
Right. So there'll be specific contexts where it's even more important. We're gonna get to that. Then we'll get to it. You're going to see that if you're going into a shul, you better be wearing it. If you're a big Talmud Chacham, then that's another one. If you're a big Talmud Chacham, you would always put a sudar over your head. That's another Gemara. But same kind of flavor, but those are particular circumstances. These are the three generic. These are generic ones where anyone should wear a yarmulke. Right? It's not specifying a situation or a type of person. It's a good idea for everybody. But what's the common theme here? Is there any mention that this is some kind of a lacha? Are they quoting a pasuk from the Torah? Are they quoting a din or a banan? It just seems to me, what is the flavor here? Clearly that to wear a yarmulke is a really good thing to do. It's an eitz hatova, it's good advice, it's a midas chasidus. The way the Rambam puts it, snius gedola, noagim tamidei chachamim ba'atzman. And he only specifies tamidei chachamim, and says it's a good, modest, appropriate way for a Jew to walk around. Lo yizvazu v'lo yizgalu roshan. Never walk without your head covered. So again, even the Rambam recognizes that the thrust of the Gemara is that wearing a yarmulke is an appropriate, good, very good idea to be a good person. But no one has mentioned anything about it being us. It is midas chasidus at most.
So according to that, we're saying that first, even if it were the run of the same side of the horizon, and since it was adopted by other religions as a religious card,
we'll get to Christians in a bit. It's quite the contrary.
No, but they
take off his hands.
But the priests and the higher.
Yeah, we have to deal with that.
That's just a good.
We're supposed to hold on. We're going to get the who's guy is going to be very important for us. But to bring that point back, if we get to it today, which I hope we do, this is a one-time topic. But we'll see. Very important. Bring it back. Okay, but we're not ready yet. Very good. I want to just, the foundation is that the starting point before the Christians, let's talk pre-Christianity, right? Because the Christians are going to give us trouble from both ends, what you just said, and then we're going to see from another angle they're going to give us a lot of trouble in this area. But before there was anything about Christians, I want you to know that this was the thrust of this halacha.
The Rambam, where it came from?
He was a Talmud Chacham, and I'm sure he wanted to be Tzaddik, so he took his good advice. You got to understand, something like the Rambam is going to do with the Chassidus all the time, right? For God's sake, all he did was learn Torah and Chabbos.
Probably worse German.
Well, if you look at the Machberet, if you look at the picture on the Machberet,
I heard it was phenomenal.
I heard that it doesn't look it, that it's not any reputable writer that that's what the Rambam looked like.
Okay.
Right. Or anything. But right, we always imagine it now. I certainly do. All the pictures of him have him in Turkey. Which, you know, who knows. But he definitely covered his head because of what he just, I just read to you. Yeah. There's no way he's not going to follow something where he calls it the sneas of a Talmud Chacham. All right, so what's the halacha? I'm telling you all the background. How do we paskin? So if you look on page 3, and this I'm going to really abbreviate. I will not bore you with the inside details. But on page 3, the Torah presents it just this way. He says, Asur leilach makom hazakufa. In terms of walking haughty, that is an isser. However, the chaserosha, and you should cover your head and not work down on others. Not that it's asur to do otherwise, but you should do it. And the bach over here on the left, it's all that underlined stuff, if you get a chance, is emphasizing that that pshat in the Torah, that it's not a din, it's not a chiyuv, it is not an isser to not have your head covered, it is purely midas chasidus. The bach.
The bach.
Right? But you see all the underlining? I don't want to read through it because it's going to bog us down. And if you turn the page, here's the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, also, listen to the way he presents this din. In the Shulchan Aruch, where in the Yarmulke is presented as follows. Asur leilach bekom hazagufa. Again, when it comes to walking around haughty, that is an isser. However, what does he say? Below yelech, balanamas, yilei rosh. That is real obvious language use. He's saying, you're not allowed, you're prohibited from walking haughty, but you shouldn't walk without covering your head. So, and I was going to get into a little more detail, but I won't. If you look at the Nosakalim, the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, they're all building up this idea. That this is all just midas chasidus, and they're pointing out that's what the Shulchan Aruch means. You don't really have to wear a yarmulke other than it's a midas chasidus to do.
Is there really a difference between the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch? Because the Tur specifically quotes the Gemara and says, Hasan Rav Huna lo asal da'alamas. Rav Huna was one of these.
Right, so it's possible that the Machaber is saying more.
Well, it definitely sounds like
okay.
A little bit
different. So, alright, I was avoiding this, but I'll comment a little bit. You know, here's where we run into the problem of, I would love to get into each one of our makoros in Eon and much more exploration. I feel that the majority of the class doesn't want to do that, I'm not sure. But I'll give you a little bit. If you ask, I'm going to answer. So, what you just opened up is a major discussion in these Aparim.
Can of worms.
The Beis Yosef himself, absolutely on the tour, seems to be implying that it's not just a mitzvah. He's implying that it's more than that. He wants to lump it together with Kohen Sefer. And in his presentation here, there are those that argue that he really means more. Maybe he really means more. Not just a mitzvah. There's a whole fight to Magen Avraham, and the Machzis Shekel gets in there, and the Bach was the big one who's touting it the other way, and that's who wins. At the end of the day, with all that discussion, your point is well taken. The winning sheet that is, that's a mitzvah. That's the acknowledged consensus opinion.
It sounds very much like a remedy so far. Like meaning that this halacha is touched is walking haughty, so therefore, like it's almost like a derabanan, meaning that like it's a boundary.
Good.
So where the yarmulke to prevent the.
There's a real halacha not to walk around haughty, and this is sort of like a.
It's like a boundary to prevent.
Exactly. If you get there to do it, except that it doesn't even make it to the expression of a real zera derabanan. See, zera derabanan.
No, I was just using an example. I mean, not necessarily.
No, I'm saying like, no, but you're right. That's exactly the kind of role it's playing, right? To make you mindful that you are in the presence of the Shekhinah all the time, and that will lead to you not being walking haughtily and doing all the other prohibitions you might be doing. But, you know, if you call it a real zera, like a zera derabanan, that even makes it on a higher level. I'm making it on a lower level than that. I'm saying, it's not even that. It's the same purpose that you mentioned, but I'm only calling it a chasidus because no way did Chazal tell me that it's an official zera. Didn't get on the books.
That's why I said remedy as opposed to...
Right, exactly. But I agree with you. I think that is exactly the point. Exactly.
Just along the line of like being haughty or whatever, there are other things that a religious Jew does that will remind us of God throughout the day when he sits his, you know, saying
good
during the day,
good,
you know, making brachos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how like wearing a kippah
is absolutely necessary.
It is not necessary, but if you are actually, listen, if you're not religious, you're not going to care where to keep anyway. But if you are religious, there are other things that you do throughout the day that will keep you from being haughty. Everything we do in the entire day is based, should theoretically be based
right.
on.
So this is just, maybe that's why it's only made this whole season. It could be for that very reason that, you know, if there was nothing else, then this would move up the ladder of severity, and this would be a din, or just a zero, something else. But therefore, it's a minus hasidus because you're right. Maybe we're not that worried because we know that you're doing a lot of other things. Could very well be. However, everything's going to change. This is before Christianity. Everything I'm telling you is in the times of the Gemara correct. However, right? Well, the times of the Gemara begin to overlap with Christianity, right? Everyone knows the Talmud correct. When did Christianity come into existence?
During the time of zero.
That's easy,
zero.
Right?
No.
Well,
no,
you know that
not
conventional years.
Not
but
exactly.
That is not exactly what Christianity
no,
did.
It's not.
But Yeshu himself was not really into Christianity.
Paul, caused by his
yeah.
It really starts with Paul, or Saul, whatever you want to call him, about 100 years later. Right? And he's the one that like broke from halacha. And that's where everything started, like, for a while. But what we're going to talk about is that Christianity has certain habits that are going to affect the status of what we do when it comes to the Yarmulke, and that is even later than this time period of 100 years after that, so it's even later. So it's really, in the times of the Gemara, they were not concerned with what we are going to be concerned with. It's later than the Gemara. Gemara was redacted when?
300, 400.
About 550, right? The Mishnah 200, and Ravina and Ramash about
400,
year 550. 600. Huh?
What's
that?
Something.
Alright, so.
Wasn't the Shulchan Aruch written only a few hundred years ago?
The Shulchan Aruch was written in the 1500s. About 15. Machab actually took like. He wrote the Beis Yosef, which is the parish on the tour. It took about 20 years of that. And then over 12 years, he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, which is the abridged version of the Beis Yosef. It comes out, I think it's about 1556. 60s or anything
like that. 60s. And so he says it's meaning
Hasidus. Right, well, wait. So he's talking about it, right, exactly. Yeah, right. That's a very good land. Actually, that's very. Whoops.
Jeez.
So, yes, I like that because let's use that as a landmark up to the time of the Shulchan Aruch. Up to that 16th century, we're still only worried about meaning Hasidus. Right? Now, watch what happens when we go a little further. The first look, I want to make one other point on page 5. Everybody go to page 5 in the handout. This goes to one of the Gemaras, I think, that David was referring to. This point is what I was talking about, that I need to come back to what you were saying. Yesh Omrim, this is Halacha Gimel, in Siman Samechbet. Sha'asur lahotzi askara mipi b'rosh bevulah. Here the Machaber does use the expression asur, right? But it's a very particular, specific context. You can't say any holy statement, which means you can't daven, you can't say Kriya Shema, you shouldn't probably learn Torah with your head that's not covered. And he throws in, that might be in that category as well, is going into a shul. So going into a shul and davening and saying things like that are going to be into a category unto themselves. So we have the general wearing of a yarmulke. That's minas chasidus according to Rambam. In this context, iser. What's the difference? What is what? What's special about saying a davening kedusha or going into a shul?
Both of them are still different, though. You should rebuke someone who goes to the shul that had it covered.
Right, so there.
Iser is only by the.
Okay, you could be pedantic that way. The one they're sure of is you certainly shouldn't say anything. You shouldn't
right.
bench. This is why, I'll just tell you the Maisa. Let's say in the Syrian community, this is very prevalent. I remember, let's say, when I was in high school, right?
Yeah.
It was the first time I was exposed. Let's say I had a lot of friends that were Sephardi, Syrians. And they were. No matter what they were doing with the rest of their lives, there were certain things they were incredibly mocked about. One of them was, you know, we'd be going out, I won't say to where, right? I was in high school, and it would be an incongruous place. It's suddenly like, I'm not thinking at that time, like necessarily being so mocked about benching, doing everything 100% right. And these guys are like looking at the yarmulke and something that they weren't wearing up to that moment, and being very mocked about bracha. Bracha Chrona, it was unbelievable to me. And it's rooted in this. we'll see that in that context there's an extra special need for yarmulke, such which we're going to explain a little further. So I'm not going to do it yet because I want to leave a little suspense.
The yarmulke to where they keep them.
Yeah, but in that context, in that mapping, you're going to keep all the time. You know, like we walk in the street, they weren't wearing the yarmulke. We're going wherever we were going, they weren't wearing the yarmulke. But when it came to making a bracha,
the religious ones are yarmulke
now. Now things have changed. Now it's a lot different nowadays, I think, for the most part.
No, they still have the minhag to take it off.
To take it off. Okay, so good. We're going to understand that. We're going to look at actually a tshuva at the end of this whole thing. We're going to look at Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's Ashkenazi, and Rav Avad Yosef. This time I got him in here. Right? Okay, so now, where does everything change? So everything changed with the following concept that somebody mentioned before. Bechukoseyem lo seleim. What does that mean? What does that do? Where did that fit? Torah tells me, Bechukoseyem lo seleim. Somebody give me a quick definition. You calling it idol worship? Okay.
Don't follow the non-Jewish ways.
Don't follow the chukim, which we have to define, obviously, of the non-Jews.
Non-Jews are not necessarily wrong or bad in any way. Idol worship.
I am not saying that this statement. Please let me go on record. I in no way imply, certainly did not say explicitly, that the chukim implies that non-Jews are bad people. In fact, if you say that, I'm not saying you are. If one says that, they miss the point of that thing. They completely miss the point. It has nothing to do with that. This is a typical, I'm not saying you're, this is a little bit getting under my skin, and I'll tell you why. Because I see this type of discussion, I'm not going to have it with you, because I'm going to really point out to you the truth from an authoritative position. Mm-hmm. But I have in, let's say, the world at large, we'll get into conversations with people who know a little something like this, and they seize upon it, and it's absolutely saying something along the lines that you didn't say, which is, see how prejudicial and biased the Torah is, you know, all that kind of stuff, and that all that reveals is you're totally ignorant to what the din is talking about, not you, but those people. Now, let me say what it really is. B'chuzein lo seleichu is a major discussion. It's a major discussion because there are two Gemaras that talk about it. Two major Gemaras. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Now, I just want you guys to know, here's where I want to do things differently than we did last time. Normally what I would have done is put these two Gemaras into this hand, and I got into it, and I'm very happy. But I'm not going to do that because I think you've got to make the time. So I'm quickly going to get to the bottom line of each one. Here's the bottom line of each one. In defining what Hussein lo Seleichu, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah comes to the following conclusion. It says, it means that it was talking, the Gemara over there was talking about a minhag to burn the bed and the utensils of a king, right? So it was talking about doing that, Jews doing it. If there's a very important person and he died, after his death, there was a minhag to burn his bed and his different kelim, his different utensils.
That wasn't good.
Huh?
That wasn't good.
Whoa, watch. So the Gemara right away says, whoa, how can you do this? Isn't this Chukas HaGoyim? They did this. They do this. Isn't this Avodah Zarah? So the Gemara says, no, it's not Avodah Zarah. They're doing it for a different reason. They're doing it as a show of honor to the king. They're not doing it because it's being Ovid Avodah Zarah. The Havamina was, this must be some type of Avodah Zarah. The Maskana was, no, it's not really Avodah Zarah. It's just, we're doing it for a really valid purpose. To show honor to the king. So therefore it's not Chukas HaGoyim. The other Gemara says, this is the one in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says over there, it's talking about, this is a really funny Gemara. A little bit funny in the beginning. So the Mishnah is almost being a little funny. The Mishnah goes like this. The Mishnah says, it's defining the different types of capital punishment, right? So one of them is Cheref. What's Cheref?
Sword.
Cutting off hand, right? So it's saying, how should we do it? So first it describes, you get this guy stand up and cut off his head. So they say, just like the secular authorities do. And the Gemara says, but that's disgusting. You know what you should do? Put the head down on a chopping block, take an axe, and chop it off. So the Gemara says, at the end of the Mishnah, the last line of the Mishnah is, but that's the most disgusting thing I ever heard of. So you hear that flow? You know, we better not do the conventional mode of execution that all the other secular authorities are doing. which is the guy stands, you take a sword and you neatly chop off his head. We better do one that's maneuverable. What we should do is we should put the guy's head on a block and then take a big axe and chop it off. So the Mishnah says, isn't that much more gruesome? And that's how the Mishnah ends. So the Gemara right away says, whoa, what's going on with this? So the bottom line, the Gemara says, well, the issue of Manava was, we're going to be doing something because they did it. It was Bechukosein lo say lechem. And the Gemara says, ends up saying, but since this is a type of Nisa that's found in the Torah, right? Therefore, it's not Bechukosein lo say lechem. So, in summary, from these two Gemaras, we get two parameters, potential parameters for defining what is Bechukosein lo say lechem. It literally means, don't do their chukim. Don't do their habits. Don't follow their habits. So what does that mean? That means, like, if they wear cool clothes, I can't wear cool clothes. If they wear whatever, if they listen to certain music, I can't listen to music. Is that what it means? To some, yes, we'll see. But no, we're going to start defining it halachically. So the first thing is, whatever they're doing, if we say in the Torah to do it also, it's okay. And the other one says, whatever they're doing, as long as it has a reason and it's not avodah zarah, it's okay. So which is it? Is it both? What's defining it? How do we define it? So this becomes a major machlokes rishonim. There are four shittos. You want to know all of them, or you want to know just the winning one?
Three of them.
Three of them? Okay.
Turn on.
Okay. I'll tell you two of them. I'll tell you two of them because those are the halachos ones. The Maharik says the following. He says, we're going to learn it the following way. The upshot of the entire discussion, both of ours, is the following. This is how we pass it. We pass it like this. Do you know what Bechukosein lo say lechem means? Don't do anything solely for the reason that you're emulating them. And not to say they're bad people, but you as a Jew don't want to be doing actions and activities in your life as a result of a need to emulate what they are doing. Which means, if you have a reasonable, rational reason to do it, even if they're doing it, do it.
So, example.
Yes, perfect example is the context of the Maharik's tshuva on this topic, which is near and dear to us. Listen to this one.
A Marian Shul.
He was asked by, what did you say?
A Marian Shul.
No, but that's definitely an outgrowth of the sugya, right, for sure. But the Maharik's kasha was directly, no, that's going to be what we're going to deal with. But the Maharik's shaila was, a guy was graduating medical school. You believe this? This is in the Middle Ages, right? Guy's graduating medical school. And the rule was, you gotta wear, once you're a professional doctor, as a uniform for doctors, to show who's a doctor, they gotta wear a certain cape, right? So, am I allowed to wear this cape, right? This is, nowadays, this comes up in the cap and gown ceremony.
That's not a religious thing, though.
Oh, I know. So the Maharik said, of course you can wear it. He said, of course, because you're not doing that because they're doing it. You're doing it because you want to be identified as a doctor. Yeah. That's a rational reason. This is very important because anything you're doing that has their own reason that's rational and not just because you... In other words, what you're not allowed to do, the thrust of this, is that don't become a sniveling person who just follows what the non-Jewish crowd is doing. That's what the Torah is after. In so to speak, I mean, it's much more elaborate than that. It's a little bit of an oversimplification, but it's basic. It's not because they're bad, but because we want you to be proud of who you are. And as a Jew, do things that are rational and reasonable, or Jewish, or both. Hopefully they're always both, right? Now, the Grah, I just wanted you to hear the modification of the Grah. The Vilna Gaon throws one little hitch into it. He's not satisfied with the Maharik, he wants to take it one step further. We don't pass him like the Grah, we pass him like the Maharik. But the Grah throws in, it's got to be something that we would have done on our own as Jews. So he paskin on the cape thing. Awesome. He said, don't tell me it's a rational thing you want to identify yourself as a doctor. We as Jews never would have come up with such a stupid thing to wear a cape. So therefore, it is something that is b'chusem lo sedem. Because that's a chok. What does the word chok mean? Chok means that it doesn't, like, it's like a mindless, brainless thing. It's like, the example I always think of is... Does anyone ever watch The Honeymooners?
Yeah.
Remember Ralph Crampton? Mm-hmm. He's part of that fraternity. What they used to wear? The raccoon head or something? Now, how many here would walk around with a raccoon head? Hat. You would? Okay. But it's probably... You do that for rational reasons. First of all, this is a one. This is like a dead raccoon.
It was more like a raccoon.
It had a big tail.
Yeah.
Whatever. Anyway, that's what I was thinking. Like, that's like a mindless. Not, so the grower would say that's a stupid thing to do. The Ma'arif might say that's okay because you're identifying it as this fraternity and you're part of the thing. So the Maisa, we pass them like the Ma'arif. That's the good news. Which means that you're allowed to do anything that has a normal reason to do it, even if they're doing it also.
So I would understand, like, I just don't understand where the grower is coming from. Like, he says, because it's not a religious thing. Like, let's say every single doctor is also a Christian.
Because it's all the emphasis of the point of the Torah. But the grower is saying like this. What's the Torah after when it says, is it emphasizing not to be like them, or is it emphasizing to be like us? So the Gemara is really the latter. The Gemara is like saying, it's emphasizing that who you should be, how you should act, should always be uniquely Jewish. The Ma'arik is more like saying, no, the thing is, be rational, just don't be a follower. The Gemara is more, I think that's how I understand their machlokes. The Gemara is emphasizing more, it's not just enough not to be a follower. You gotta be a groundwork. You gotta be like a Jew. You gotta do things because you're Jewish. The motivation for your different actions and activities are, this is what the Jews would come up with. It's a prize, right? I don't want to get too far into this, but that's how I understand the Machlokes. Lemaisa, we're satisfied with Ma'arik. Just don't be a follower, brainless follower without rationality to what they're doing, right? So what about style of clothing? So is the reason that I'll dress according to the contemporary style because I'm following them? No, I want to look nice. So I would maintain that wearing any type of clothes, that's contemporary clothes, is Ma'arik would say is definitely not what we're saying. What's important for us?
It's much more to this question, though. If the question originated because the cookbook came from the church.
I didn't say it yet. Let me say it. Hold on. If you look at page 6, which we just finished, that's where you have the halacha on the chukos sefer. Page 6 and page 7. Really, you'll see, if you look through it carefully, you're going to see the different shittos. We pass in basically like the Ma'arik, and the only other thing I'll just mention, the Ram. The Ram throws in an automatic no is something that's used for Avodah Zarah. If something's used for Avodah Zarah, no matter what, even if it makes sense now, you can't do it.
Okay, but I thought we said that that's not true. I thought we said that if you have a rational reason to do something.
Right. One exception
is Avodah Zarah.
Okay. Mamash Avodah
Zarah.
Right. That's why I'm drawing it now because you'll see it in the halacha. It's not that important for what we're going to talk about. We're going to stick with the Ma'arib because that's the main thing, but I don't think wearing Yamgar or not wearing Yamgar is Avodah Zarah. So that's why it's not relevant to us. Oh, many other questions are. There's lots to talk about with this issue. It opens up, you know, a thousand issues of discussion. But let's just see, what does that have to do with us? Who's the one that brought it in? The Taz. So if you look on page 8, and really on page 9. He begins this discussion on page 8, but go to page 9, where that, you have an arrow?
Yeah.
Good, that arrow zooms in for you guys. He discusses the whole Midas Chassidus thing about wearing a yarmulke. And he says, bottom line is, up until the times of what I'm about to say, the most wearing a yarmulke was in Midas Chassidus. That was it. However, the Nira Li, Shiyesh Iser Gamor, Mitam Acher. There's an Iser Gamor not to wear a yarmulke. And this is going to change everything in terms of our concern. Because up till now, Midas Chassidus, I don't have to give up a dime for it. If I have any doubts that my job will be lost because of Midas Chassidus, I don't wear my yarmulke. Forget it. Or I won't maintain my job, fulfill my job, anything. However, if it's an Iser Gamor of Bechel Kuseyam, Lo Seylechu, if he's right about this, then we got something to work on. Because then we will not be able to take off our yarmulke just because we might not get a job.
Could you please repeat his opinion?
Let me read it. I want to read this. This is the one thing I want to read inside. So go to the arrow. Venerally, and it appears to me, the Taz is talking for himself now. Shiyesh Iser Gamor. There is an absolute Iser, not just a Midas Chassidus, but a real love, Mitam Acher, for a whole other reason. Da'ainu, meaning, right, specifically, Kevan Shechoku Achshav Bein Ha'akum, because it is a chok, it is a custom of the non-Jews, and he's talking about the Christians, to not cover their heads. Now, hang on. I hope you're going to say what Moshe Feinstein says, and what Rav Yosef says. I bet you will. But just let me finish the task, and then you'll get to say it. right? So he says, what is the general Akum's habit, right? Tami tekef she yoshvin porkin male makoba. What is the etiquette? Certainly in the times of the Taz, who's writing when? He's like in the 17th century. So what was the etiquette? Is you come in, you take your hat off. That is definitely the convention in society, right? And where more than anywhere else do they do that?
Church.
Right. In their religious expression and in their religious house of worship. So that's why we're going to see the whole din is going to intensify in that setting. If all the din of where Yom Kippur relates to the Bechukos, it would make a lot of sense according to this approach that it would be most severe where they are most mapped to do it, especially since the whole message of wearing the yarmulke is the opposite.
Well, it doesn't really matter about the head covering. The main thing is that you're removing it specifically to be like someone else, so they don't judge you as a Jew.
Exactly.
They're taking off a hat, and then you can compare taking off a yarmulke, taking off a hat in church. I feel like that's
no, that's even worse. In other words, like
that's unnecessary, though. You prove the point by saying
you're right. The point was just that they take off their hats. Correct. Right. In other words, don't be like them. They take off their hats for whatever reason. But now, if they're taking their hat off in order to worship their religion.
And to humble themselves. It, when they take the hat off, it's an honor to the person that they're worshiping.
Okay.
The king, when I walk into the king, he's not going to take his hat off. The fact is that they are doing it to humble themselves. So if I'm trying to humble myself, that's
an independent reason to do it, and it's not because I'm following that. Right? Is that what you want to say?
Yeah.
But the Taz.
It's interesting. I think you could say something like that. No one does.
Wait.
Meaning, like, I don't think it's an absurd argument that you're making. It's not the one I need anyway. Let's see. There's other. I have better arguments. Anyways, let's apply this to us. Let's clarify. Let's make sure we got the Taz. So the bottom line of the Taz is the Taz is saying the reason that you must wear yarmulke in our time is far more severe than it ever was before. Right? In the old days, it was a meaningless, no big deal. Only maybe a Tommy Chacham did it. No one else did it. You know. Nowadays, since it's become an expression of the secular person, or an expression even of a religious Christian, that you take off your hat. So we Badafka have to keep ours on. Because if we start taking it off, aren't we not over our Bechukosayim Rosayim? That's the Taz. In which case, if he's true, if this is correct, then we should conclude that we must keep it on even to give up our jobs. However, I'll let you know, the good news is, and I want you guys to figure it out, because I thought of what Moshe said, and what Rabbi Yosef said myself. So you got to do it. Why is this not going to hold up? Very simply, understanding the Ma'arik, the way the Ma'arik explained the Lukosei Moshe.
I have a separate question, I think. I just don't understand what he's basing the Metzias on, right? He lives in Eastern Europe, where he's surrounded by Christians, but what about...
Muslims.
Yeah, what about Islam? They all wear kippahs.
Right, you know, the Rambam didn't come up with it. He was only surrounded by Muslims.
Right.
So he never even dawned on him such thing. Although he knew about Christians, right? Obviously. He's plenty in common, man. Like, they're over the Mazar, and the Muslims are not over the Mazar. But nevertheless, he's not experiencing it on a daily basis like the Taz is.
Right.
The way the Taz presents it, it's almost as though it became more in vogue in his time period for this to be their hat.
Right.
So
he's need to separate questions.
So he's saying, for his time, this is what Hussein was saying.
So, a separate question is, does this din constantly change?
Yes! Obviously it does. It was Midas Chassidus. During the Taz, this is time, let's grant. You know what? The Taz, you're right. During your time period, this meant something. A person takes off his hat, he's like emulating
that. Right,
however, why does a person walk in the street now with that hat? How many non-Jews walk around in the street with a hat?
90%.
Well, it depends. If it's cold, they wear a hat. Why do they take the hat off when they come in? As an expression of Chok Akum? No, they're hot.
Right, yeah.
That's what Ramosha says. That's what Ramosha says. They say, this is nice. This is nice. But, Bizmaneinu, we don't have to worry about this anymore. Because,
ridiculous.
Right.
I don't see why it was
ridiculous. No, you can't say it was ridiculous to begin with. It makes sense.
Wait.
But Bizmaneinu, it doesn't.
Okay. They don't purposely not.
In his time, they obviously did. In his time, they did. That's what he was pointing
out.
Now we don't. Yes, so relax. You gotta have faith in them.
They always
use logic. I mean, trust.
That I don't see that why the fact that the tea has changed, that the fixture goes away, because
Not because you're an argumentative person, right?
Not well. I think that I argued before is irrelevant to what's going on now, so I think that was still
good. But that was my point before.
Yeah, but
I don't need to come on to your thing, which I don't really necessarily agree with.
Just the other way around, actually, because this what you just said is a question, because the grammar verbs are very close to the place that you quoted with Chiksegoy, that discusses the two holidays, Hatanaya and Kalanda, that we don't observe. And it was started by Marishan with great intentions to thank God for the winter and the shortening of the days, but we don't observe it because it was taken off by pagans and it was turned into a bad holiday. Now, the pagans that did that, to my knowledge, don't exist anymore. So, according to what you said, we should still take Kalanda and Saturnalia.
I would say that the way we view the holidays today is based on our contemporary situation. So, for example, Thanksgiving. Right? Are you talking about Thanksgiving and holidays?
No,
let's just Thanksgiving. Right. This is a major point of contention. There are some people that say, don't do anything to Thanksgiving, don't recognize it at all, because that's the Holy Samuel Seder. However, there are others that will analyze it as follows. They'll say, wait a second. What's the contemporary experience of Thanksgiving? Is there any religious significance to it? No. Is there some type of spiritual significance to it, that it's a day of showing gratitude? Yes. Is that a specifically non-Jewish concept that I wouldn't have thought of? Even the Gural could be satisfied with Thanksgiving. It's a very Jewish idea, Karasatoa. It might be that we think that you should have a Karasatoa every single day. But I want to express it publicly. I would say that according to contemporary reality, Thanksgiving is definitely not.
The concept of Seder Hadaah, just that this isn't like an American context. There's no Seder Hadaah for the country, so it's...
Therefore, it's a Jewish idea.
Right.
I'm saying even the grow would be okay with it.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we see that the Jews stopped observing, or maybe never did observe, as Jews, Saturnalia and Kalanda, which were two holidays that were adopted.
What
day? Saturnalia and Kalanda, mentioned in Avodah Zarah. So
I tend not to read them.
That's good.
You know, there's an Issur Daraisa to read them. Unless, I just feel like, you know, I have to tell you. In case you didn't weren't aware, the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, this is a very famous Rambam, says that unless it's having the horus, unless you're doing it for the purpose of understanding it in order to teach people, in order to deal with it as a member of Sanhedrin or something like that, it's us to read about the Avodah Zarah, just for intellectual curiosity.
No, Saturnalia Kalanda wasn't an Avodah Zarah. It was a holiday that was started by immersion, and it was adopted by pagans. And they perversed it. They
mess things up.
Exactly, and that's why we didn't observe. But now those pagan religions that did that don't exist anymore. In that case, if what you're saying is true, that with contemporary situation changes,
to observe those holidays.
It's a holiday that thanks God that originally we should have done, but the only reason why we didn't do it, why we didn't observe it, is because the pagans did not.
Oh, yeah.
So we should do that. Okay. We should continue it right now. No, nothing to do. It's 8 days.
It could be that that's entirely true, but we don't have the authority. Someone's got authority. He's got to say that's okay. Do it. In other words, like, yeah, no.
The same argument you say, we don't have the authority to say that we should stop wearing cotton.
No, but Ramosha Feinstein does.
So why
the Taz does? They did. In other words, Ramosha Feinstein reversed the Taz. Don't you understand what he's doing? He and Rav Avadi Yosef both, each in their individual context, reversed this Taz. The Taz said, you must wear yam if you don't. It's usur. Because of the Chutzim Nosalech, based on the contemporary change, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Vadi Yosef, who do have the authority, Paskind, now back to Midas Chasidus, and the real Nafkamina, you know what the Tshuva Rav Moshe was writing? Look at the title, Imutr Leilech Begiloy Rosh Letzorach Parnasasa. He was asked, I'm out in Denver, and apparently in Denver they didn't hire anyone to wear yarmulke. Can't get a job. Can I take my yarmulke off? He goes through all our discussion. Psak, take it off. If it's your barnasa, there's no isser, the taz is off. Midas chasidus, you don't have to. So, lamaisa, I just want to start. The first issue that, in terms of our question, as a doctor, if it's a question of a job, you have the ipsan. That's for sure. We're going to treat it as midas chasidus. You do not have to give up a job for this issue. I'm telling you that in my personal experience in the New York metropolitan area, I don't know any place where that becomes an issue. I know everyone in all fields are wearing yarmulkes. The last ones, I think, to get in seem to be the surgeons. And the only ones that aren't are, I mean, there are different yechidim that don't. Like, let's say Yekis, people of German origin, there was a strong minhag there not to worry about. So you'll find a lot of the most from Yeki person, this is just an accepted minhag within their community. Right? But otherwise, in the New York metropolitan area, everyone's rarely wearing yarmulke these days. And again, in the psych area, they tend not to because it has a lot of baggage with it. But outside of the New York area, it might be more difficult. There might be connotations to it that can be effective. You've got to kind of feel it out. And I certainly would, asking for somebody who gets a sense that they're not getting jobs because they're wearing a yarmulke, that they can take off the yarmulke to get the job. And to keep the job.
What if they feel they're not going to, they're having the job?
But I would want the person to be honest.
They might lose some money. Like,
yeah, I mean, it is a little.
They might make some money, but they also might lose.
What kind of scenario is that?
Might make
get paid less for radio.
Oh, like, let's say you guys a salesman or something, and now the rabbi walks in and wants to buy something.
Woman outside.
But if, like, Jew walks in.
Yeah, everything's going to depend on the context. Whatever comes out of the outcome. You're not required to give up a lot of money.
It can only be in terms of like level of
what you say. You could take it off.
I guess it would be case by case basis. In other words, it would depend on what we're talking about. We would have to like work it.
Like you want to be completely a customer. You
don't want to. Yeah, it's in the same league. In other words, if it's really going to impact in any type of significant way, I would say that it's probably lying in the center. It's case by case. That kind of question. Details are important. How much you're talking?
Yes and no.
How likely is it really going to be effective?
No, I talked to a few people that are salesmen and they told me it's pretty
common not to worry.
Not to worry.
Yeah, and that no.
Because it affects.
There, I think it's significant. Right.
Yeah, I think it's significant.
So let's say you're in a place, you're a doctor or whatever, and you're not wearing a yarmulke, but then you're like going for lunch or something.
Ah,
when you sit down.
Good. That's why I said this is the first child. We really have very little, time's over. What we'll do is on Monday, we're going to do that question, right? We just have like 5 minutes left at this topic. So what I haven't talked about is A, so what about the bracha and that angle on it? And then, just I thought I would throw at you some interesting offshoot questions that relate to this. For example, according to this, can anyone tell me why non-married women don't wear yarmulkes?
Non-married women?
Like, I mean, some do.
Is
nowadays,
it to, isn't it to do with the?
But why is the convention not to? Don't they have to have this meeting with
this? I don't know.
It's
what's
going on.
Can I just say that?
Well, right. Even
they have
a
close convention. They don't need it.
Even. First question is why all, and then even.
Huh?
It actually goes back to the tops.
It's got nothing to do with.
It
has nothing to do.